Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody. It is May 16th, Monday, in beautiful mortgage land across America. We appreciate you dialing in and being with us. Many of you are dialed in or listening via streaming. We appreciate it so much. Good to have you with us. Look forward to getting into a lot of good discussion. We're going to be talking later on about LO Comp, trying to sort through some of the confusion that's out there, straighten out a couple of the misnomers that were going floating around this last week on the LinkedIn discussion group. We're going to get into that. Very exciting. And we're also going to discuss the, now that the call report has, we're at the deadline today, how did you do with that? What can you do with the information? We're going to get into that with the Profit Doctor. Get into what can we do with all of that good information. But there's also this, with it being May 16th, it's another significant day. I'm going to honor my daughter. She's turning 14. I'm wondering if it's also a bit prophetic that in certain sense that it's also the day that the debt ceiling was reached in America. We have maxed out our credit card as a country, folks, and we have reached it. Now, I think they're going to be able to do some funny and clever things related to how to manage that and cook the book, so to speak, so it doesn't have an immediate impact. But this is the day that we signaled that we maxed out the credit card. So my wife and family are out shopping. May they not do that to ours, and may we not follow the national example here. But happy birthday to my daughter on her 14th birthday, and welcome to all of you on the program. Joe Farr is flying back from anniversary weekend in California, and so he is not on the program, but I talked to Dr. Dan, the economist that works with Joe, and he filled me in with a lot of great information I'm about to share with you. Again, we started opening up the week today, talking about today. It's fairly flat, although it was a little volatility earlier on, but all eyes are focused on, and all the discussion is really focusing on, the debt ceiling that has been hit as of today. At this point, the folks at MBS Quoteline feel that it is a non-issue as it relates to a non-factor. It's a big issue, but it does not going to be a factor in interest rates as you look at the overall impact on is this going to be an issue that's going to impact rates today or in the future? The answer is most likely not. Let's talk about last week. There was it was just really interesting, some of the things that were going on in what we were seeing last week in the report, and I'm bringing up some notes here for myself here. The volatile week and the troubles in the smaller European nations brought mixed results in the Treasury auctions. But, again, with tame inflation data, which is what everyone's looking at, is going to probably have the biggest effect and dramatic effect driving interest rates. We found ourselves a net overall pretty calm. In fact, I was talking to Dr. Dan, as we affectionately refer to him. He says, you know what, it was trying to create a lot of information and create a newsletter last week was a bit of a challenge because of what wasn't really going on. Is also the fact that there was a CPI increase 3.2%, from 1 year ago. I mean, there's just some interesting information, but nothing that's really going to move interest rates at this point higher. And so this week we've got coming up on the calendar, we have the Newport New York Empire State Index that came out at 8:30 this morning. Housing starts tomorrow, as well as industrial production. We've got the FOMC minutes that'll be out on Wednesday. But again, the Feds, the various governors have been out and talking about it, so there should be no real surprises when the minutes actually come out. All the information that's relevant to what's in the minutes has already been discussed in speeches, so it's all in the market. Thursday is got jobless claims and existing home sales data, as well as the Philadelphia index. So We have leading indicators are then on Thursday. So it's going to be a pretty benign week as far as what big market moving data there. So looking forward to having Joe come back and be with us next week. And again, happy anniversary, Joe Farr. Glad to see that you have your priorities right, that you actually went out and took your wife out for a nice anniversary weekend. Well, that's it, and we appreciate the folks at MBS Quoteline bringing us this data each and every week. Joe does a much better job of it than I do, and we'll be glad to have him back next week. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
MBSQuoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Welcome back, everybody. You know, it helps you take your finger off the mute button. You know, I grab a cup of coffee. You guys don't need to hear me sipping in your ear. So I did that. Alice, what's going on? I'm sitting in a coffee here, listening, ready, kids, going, what's Alice going to tell us today? What's the latest going on in that traffic report? I got concentrated on that, forgot to take the mute button off. Alice, good to have you on the program as you bring us the update on each and every week. What's going on out there?
Oh, my gosh. You know, it really is just a challenge these days, but I want to try and make it simple for everyone so you don't feel overwhelmed. I mean, that's our goal in the traffic report.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to just hang back in your car, turn on the radio, and chill out and listen. Go, hey, I can handle this. I'm just going to take it one step at a time. So we have, as you mentioned, Dave, we're going to talk about the loan officer compensation, kind of ever-evolving Q&A that seems to be going on in the marketplace when we get to the hot topic. For now, what I want to help everyone with is the credit risk retention proposed rule. This is the big one. The comment period expires June 10th. So what we need for everyone in the industry to understand is it has several components. Certainly, there's the 5% risk retention component. Those of you involved in secondary market, make sure you respond to how that can actually be executed in the marketplace today. That's an area that the Fed is asking for a lot of feedback about. There are dozens and dozens of questions out there that they're hoping for responses to on. You know, it's all well and good to say, sure, somebody hold 5%, you know, the value of the loan. There's a lot of nuances in the daily operations of that. The second part is certainly what defines a qualified residential mortgage. We've talked about this in detail on the other shows. So if you're hoping for more, you know, meat and potatoes on that part, last week and the week before, we really drilled down into those details. But the bottom line for us today is that it starts to be a very narrowly defined bucket of 80% loan to values with no secondary financing, 20% down payment from the borrower, and 28-36 ratios. I mean, just that short list starts to raise a lot of concerns about how would this impact home ownership, right, Dave? So, you know, I think that's plan A, is people need to talk about how it's going to affect home ownership and that mortgage insurance is not a bad thing and I think does help our risk. Have your customers at all, Dave, been talking about responding to this proposed rule on risk retention
QRM? No, that's the sad part is there's a lot of people just, I think there's been so much coming at them, they're just dazed. And so, I think a lot of people are saying it's hopeless. There's no point because we tried to influence the LO comp and look where that got us. Well, it's different. You cannot, folks, get confused with that. So to answer that question, Alice, sadly, there's not a lot of response going in, a lot of intention from our clients. So are you seeing the same? Based on what we're seeing as far as the responses, that the indication sounds like everyone's in that attitude or frame of mind.
Well, you bring up a good point that people think, you know, if with LO Comp it didn't do any good, so why should I feel differently about this? And I think as Joe mentioned in last week's show in particular, you know, this is affects everyone. The risk retention, QRM, and then the other proposed rule on qualified mortgages, these three components really affect the entire industry, whereas LO Comp just obviously affected loan originators and brokers, and so it was a smaller segment trying to, you know, have a voice to be heard. So certainly, I think, too, I want to make sure everybody's aware of the qualified mortgage piece. This particular one has the proposed rule for just the qualified mortgages. This comment period is open until July 1st. Now, what's different between the two is the QRM attaches to the 5% risk retention. So if a loan does not meet a qualified residential mortgage definition, then it would be subject to having to the lender having to hold back 5% in reserves for that loan. The QM is a standard that all lenders would have to meet, and if you weren't meeting this qualified mortgage standard, then you have subsequent challenges with your borrowers in the event of foreclosure. Did we put them in a loan that they did not have the ability to repay? So I think one area I'd like to bring to light here for the qualified mortgage is that this, even though it has a comment period to July 21st, we still have to wait for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to get put in place, which, of course, is July 21st. They subsequently have 18 months before they have to respond to QM. So it's going to be lagging, I think, and we'll have lots of time to be able to work through this. I want people, I think an area to focus on is automated underwriting. They do address this as a concern, but they don't answer the question, and they need feedback from the industry to say, what does automated underwriting have to do with this process? And I'm going to say everything.
everything
we do, we're subject to the answer out of EUNLP. I mean, would you agree that, you know, how can you
absolutely
say ratios? It needs to be 20% down and ratios of 28-36 when DU approves it at a 55 DTI.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, so anyway, I just wanted to make sure everyone thought about that aspect of it. Not only is it about consumers being able to get into home ownership, it would reduce those who might be eligible, but it also, from a daily application standpoint, will be just very inconsistent in how we define what's an acceptable loan. Be aware there are people out there commenting that they like it the way it's written. So we certainly have to have a voice to
really
say there need to be changes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I did find a comment, a couple of them on that. Because on the security exchange side, or if I'm an investor who buys MBS, I'm all for higher quality, you know.
Yep.
So,
absolutely.
All right. A couple of things I want people to have a heads up on: forms and implementation dates. So we have mentioned about the Equal Credit Opportunity Act, that the board had a comment period that recently closed, and that we're going to be getting a new adverse action notice form. What might not have been clear in previous things, we were talking about this comment period, and I realized in going back and listening to recordings, I needed to make it clear to everyone, this new adverse action form implementation date is July 21st for applications on July 21st. So be aware that this is going to happen quickly. This is going to come into play quickly. This is also true with changes to the risk-based pricing notice. That, too, was a comment period just recently closed. What this means is your notice to home loan applicant that now has the credit score and the history and the little charts on it, you're going to have to make sure your customer gets a version of that that actually showed the credit score based on the underwriting decision. I think right now a lot of companies are giving out the first one at application and done with it. You know, I got it to them, I met factor requirements. Well, this risk-based pricing regulation is the verbiage is getting changed, and effective July 21st, and again, we're assuming application dates, not action taken, but, you know, the final rule has to come out still. But effective July 21st is going to be, I now have to make sure my customer received the one that shows the score that the loan decision was based upon. And we know how things change during the loan process. So heads up on those two implementation dates. Last but not least, new House Bill 1859, Gary Peters out of Michigan, Democrat, John Campbell, California Republican. They are proposing a bill that matches what the Mortgage Bankers Association has been setting up as the mortgage credit guarantee entities, and so the text of the bill is not published yet, so we'll have more on that for everyone in future shows. We'll be talking about Fannie and Freddie and what the ideas are for them going forward. Looks like it's all starting to unfold. And that's my traffic report at the moment, Dave.
Again, we've got to get the helicopter sound going in the background as you hover over all that's moving on that. I actually found some, so we're going to actually get a sound bite playing in the background during some of that. The new House bill, when was that introduced? It's interesting. It's got bipartisanship. Is there anything significant about that? Did they just take the MBA and pretty much mirror it, you're saying? The recommendation, the MBA's recommendation?
Well, we don't have their final text. The MBA is the one saying they announced in the press, you know, they announced this last Thursday, and so the MBA is saying, in their viewpoint, it appears to mirror what their proposal was. So, and I agree with you. Yes, there is significance in that it's a bipartisan presentation on the bill.
Well, that is interesting. 1859, folks, you go on a track, start adding that to your list of what you're tracking. Not only that, there's so much moving across many of the state legislative agendas, and so we are doing everything we can just to stay up on the federal activity here. Most of you get emails regarding from your various state associations, but also another one out there that it comes to me fairly regularly, and I'm hunting for is it who is it that publishes the one that just goes through at a fairly high level, Alice, one of the ones newsletters that you recommend out there. I'm trying to think of the name of it. I got it over the weekend.
The InfoBite from Buckley Sandler.
InfoBite. Yes, Buckley Sandler, that's right. That's the one I was looking for. Mm-hmm. They seem to have they do a good job of summarizing a lot of the activity that's going on out there as well.
Yes, they do.
Well, Alice, thank you so much. Folks, we're going to be going into much more into the LO comps issues and some of the ramifications of that. Alice and I have a great discussion about some of the things we're seeing happening out there. You're not going to want to miss this discussion as we go into it. And now what do you do with all that call report data? Well, the profit doctors can tell us all about it. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. And each and every week we have the Profit Doctor helping to fix and call attention to those things that might be ailing your bottom line. Profit Doctor, also known as Andy Schell, my famous business partner. Andy, welcome to the program. What do you have for us today?
Hey, Dave, thanks. Well, this weekend I was talking about data integrity with a technology consultant, technology expert on our team, and I thought about the movie Die Hard 2 with Bruce Willis. You remember that movie? Airport?
Yeah.
And Bruce Willis is fighting mercenaries, and he's trying to make it so all the airplanes can land safely at the Chicago airport in the midst of a snowstorm.
Yep.
Well,
great movie.
In that movie, and it relates back to data integrity, in that movie, to prove a point, the missionaries reset ground level to down 500 feet, and they tell this one flight to land. Well, by doing that, it caused the altimeter, the altitude indicator on the plane to be wrong. So the pilots think that they're actually 500 feet higher than they really are. And because the instrument is wrong, and yet the pilots relied on the information, what happened? They crashed the plane because of inaccurate data. So it's so important to have accurate data. We rely on data every day to make decisions. And we trust that the data is right, you know, like we're driving around, and we trust that when the traffic signal turns green, that the cross street traffic is red. Well, because, you know, that's a signal. A green light's a signal, a red light's a signal. We know everybody knows what those mean, and we trust that they're working in concert with one another. And that's a system. Traffic lights are a system of providing data. And we need our systems and our business to do the same thing. They need to provide reliable data. And so, obviously, we use data in our business every day to make decisions. You know, as an example, we expect our financial statements to be correct, and we assume that the data in our LOS is correct, and government, the government is expecting that our data that we collect and send to them on the call report and the Hunter report is correct. And you mentioned about that. We're going to talk a little bit more about diving into the data. Well, to dive into the data and do something with the data, we first need to make sure the data is right. So all this stuff that we're pulling together, the call report, the Hunter report, financial statements, well, how do we know that the data is right? And, you know, data integrity is a really essential component of any system. We just assume that it's right. And, you know, the foundation of a mortgage bank is the technology infrastructure. You can't operate a mortgage company today without a solid and robust technology infrastructure, which means all the systems that hold the data together, the LOS, the pricing system, and the interface from the pricing system out to the various aggregators, and is that information right? And the operation system and the data that flows from the operation system to the pricing system to the LOS, and, oh, by the way, we're going to push data out to the doc prep system and then interface back to the accounting system or get data into the accounting system and all the other systems. There's all this data moving all over the place. You know, Dave, in the Campus MBA webinar that we teach, we talk about that with every single mortgage that's funded by a mortgage bank and then sold to an investor, there's 24 steps that have to happen from the time the funding request is created to go to the warehouse line. I'm not talking about processing or underwriting decisions or doc draw or any of that. I'm talking from the time you're asking the warehouse lender to lend the money to the mortgage bank and send the money to the title company. There's 24 steps that has to happen, and all that contains data. And so the biggest issue that we see, the biggest issue that I'm concerned about, is that we see people assume that the data in the computer system must be correct because it's in a computer system. You know, because it looks good, you know, walks like a duck, talks like a duck, must be a duck, right? Well, it could be a fake, because what if the data is not right? And, you know, relying only on data because it looks good is really dangerous. We need to be very careful about that. I'm sure, Dave, you've had experiences with situations like that, too.
Yep, similar to that airplane going in. Wrong, wrong data.
Exactly. You
can't be trapped.
Well, you know, but you didn't crash. you know, well, here's some of the issues. Data entry errors occur for a lot of different reasons, but some of the ones that are kind of most obvious or most prevalent that we see is undertrained staff. We bring in a new branch, they don't know how to use a system, so we have undertrained staff putting data in and they don't understand what they're putting in, or we have staff that doesn't understand the content. Maybe they've gone through training but they forgot, or they just make mistakes. There's typos, or there's data interface issues where there's poor mapping or the data structures change. You know, if you have a map built and one of the other data structures change, like adding a cell in an Excel file, adding a row in an Excel file, will change the data structure because now it's, you know, instead of 80 rows, it's 81 rows, and the mapping doesn't work anymore. All these little things can cause data integrity, and if we have data integrity, then the end result's going to be bad, so we need to really be careful about that. So what do we do? Well, really the only way to know if the data is right is to test the data and compare it to the original source. Right now today, I can't think off the top of my head of very many of the folks that we work with that actually do this, but it's a really, really important step. We see it happen much more prevalently in our FDIC bank clients. They're much more apt to pay attention to this. Hopefully our mortgage banking clients will move into the fold, because now that mortgage bankers are sending in the call report, which means they're tracking application status from, you know, unlocked application comes in the door, you got to be able to report that information and report it accurately. So what we need to do is we need to improve our data entry, and we need to do that by training and coaching our team and testing our data. But the most significant concern that I have right now is on this application status detail, because it affects the call report.
That's such a good point.
Yeah, you know. And we're focusing on the call report and all its application detail, but you know what? It also affects the hedging activity. You know, Dave, you and I are talking tomorrow on a deep dive into hedging for accountants, and that's through Campus MBA tomorrow. And as we look at that hedging information, protecting the mortgage bank's interest rate risk is accomplished through the hedging activity, and the hedging activity is driven by data out of the pipeline, because then they drive pull-through assumptions. And if that's not right, your hedge is going to be wrong. So the call report requires application disposition tracking in every loan, whether it's locked or not. And so the call report must be right, because you know, what happens if it's not? Do we lose our state license? You know, I don't know for sure. And obviously the hedge position needs to be right because applications must be tracked accurately. And when we talk about the hedging activity, all locked loans in the pipeline must be reported every step through the life cycle of that application, from lock to underwriting to maybe even lock to processing complete to underwriting to docs to clear to close to warehouse and sale. All those different application status of a loan in process needs to be reported accurately up to the hedging system. So the data to the hedge that drives the pull-through calculations is based on all these statuses, including a bunch of other stuff like loan status, loan type, branch, all these things. And if it's wrong, the coverage could be wrong. And if the coverage is wrong, you're not going to get the protection you expected to have. So we've got these, we hire the top hedge advisors in the country, or we feed them information. We get these hedge reports, and we enter into these forward TBA trades. And then all of a sudden, we get to the end of the day, and we settle up, and whoops, we lost money. Well, it's because the data going into the hedge wasn't right. So you get garbage in, garbage out. You got to be careful and make sure this stuff's right. Another quick point is, you know, people are there's a lot of movement around mortgage banking right now. People are moving from one office to the other. A lot of people are joining up with bigger players with more substantial net worth. You know, the $3 million, $4 million to $10 million mortgage companies are picking up branches quickly. And, well, how do you know the branch data is correct? You know, they've got access to the system now. They've got on the LOS. They can see the pricing. They've got access to the origination system, I mean, to the operation system. Well, if the branch is putting data in, how do you know the data is right? So my opinion
so
is...
So critical.
You got to be careful about relying on data and about making decisions unless you're confident the source is accurate, because otherwise you end up with garbage in, garbage out. And you know, just because the report looks good doesn't mean the underlying data is accurate. And just because you check it once doesn't mean it's going to be correct from then on. So what I think needs to happen is I think every company should have a systematic method of periodically testing every once in a while, whether if it's monthly or every 2 months or 3 months, but periodically have a design procedure to go in and test the source data, whether if it's a manual process, check branch information, whether if it's an automated process, check the interfaces. And it should be a procedure that we're going to test and we're going to implement this. And if it's a challenge for folks to understand how to do this, give us a call. We can help you sort this out, but it's really important to make certain your system data is accurate, because otherwise we get garbage in, garbage out. So the good news is testing your data integrity will reveal weaknesses. It'll tell you about the issues in your systems. It'll tell you about issues in your training where the new branches don't understand, or some of your existing branches may not understand some of the data entry requirements, and you may not even know. And best of all, really the best part is, about doing this process of ensuring data integrity, is it'll prevent you from losing money on the hedge or having bad data filed with a call report. And we don't want to do those things. And by having good data, we then can build a foundation for then using that data to do process enhancements and flow through the organization assessments and procedure design. And there's all kinds of ways to pull and extract efficiencies and improve ROI by having good information, but you have to start with good information that's captured at the data entry source. And so it's important to check that stuff. It's important to watch it, because we have to have accurate instruments so we don't crash. So check the data source and check the systems before each flight, just like you used to do when you were flying, Dave. Make sure everything's mm-hmm. working right. You know, click your finger on the altimeter to make sure the needle's
yep.
moving.
Yep, that famous checklist.
And that's the profit doctor for the day. Dave, look forward to talking more
good.
In that segment.
I think, and we're going to be talking about that in the next segment, is now that you got all this data, now that you got all this instruments in front of you, you've got to check the data. Is it right? And if it is right, what's it telling you? We're going to get into that in the next segment. Folks, stay with us. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300
combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel Schrott can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel Schrott has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel Schrott can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel Schrott represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel Schrott today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel Schrott, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
Welcome back, everybody. This is David Lickin with Lickin' on Lending. Andy was talking about flying. Mentioned several times that my dad had an airplane, so I had the privilege of spending a lot of time in an airplane. Love flying, but you talk about systems and complex systems. But I want to tell a little story here that goes into the next segment. We can get myopically focused on problems, on issues. A number of years ago, there was an Eastern Airlines flight, and when they took off and they got up to altitude, the pilots looked down and noticed that the landing gear down light was still on. It was a warning light saying, hey, landing gear is still down. Come on, put it up. And they go, man, I thought I hit that button. So they flipped it up again. Sure enough, they thought, well, it's up. Maybe there's something wrong with this light bulb. They leaned forward, and in the course of leaning forward, they started tapping that light bulb. Here sits like a 59-cent light bulb, and both pilots are going, do you think it's this? And they have the sound recording. Unfortunately, after everything tragically had an ending, they have the sound recording, and they hear these guys talking about it. They're tapping on it. What they didn't realize is that in the course of myopically focusing on one issue, which was this, really fairly insignificant issue, the landing gear up or down, they bumped the yoke by leaning forward, tapping on that bulb. They bumped how they steer the plane, that's called the yoke. They bumped it and unwittingly disengaged the autopilot. What happened is the plane began a very slow and imperceptible drop. I mean, it started gliding, flying, but it's flying lower and lower. And because they were so myopically focused on this 159-cent light bulb, on a really fairly insignificant thing, the wheels being up or down, again, the plane could fly with it up or down, because they got focused on that, the next thing, after a while, they hear this, pull up, pull up. A warning sign line went off, and they go, what? Pull up, we're up at altitude. And they looked at the altimeter just as the plane splashed in the Atlantic, killing everyone on board. I think a lot of what our industry has gone through is we got so myopically focused on LO comp. We as an industry just got wrapped around the axle, as someone says, on that one issue. We got so myopically focused on it that I think that we have bumped the yoke and some of our guidance systems have led us off course and we're not focused on some of the issues we have. And so we have this LinkedIn discussion group up on LinkedIn, and it's been around forever. You guys, anyone who listens to the radio program has heard me talk about it. It's called the Loan Origination Compensation Changes and New Rules. And it has over 2,800 members. And some of the commentary that's going across there is the reason of what's the focus, part of the focus of this hot topic segment that I want to get into today. It seems like, and Alice and Andy, I want you to join me in on this. I want to really get into, there seems to be What's really interesting is, well, we were talking to Alice earlier, why are we not getting more commentary in some of the bills that are going on? And we thought maybe, just maybe, it's because everyone got so focused on the LO comp and we had what appears to be no impact on the outcome of that. So why try? And it reminds me of the psychologist that had the dumber monkeys in the room. I think this is fairly well published. A story, and so what they did is they had a pole, and they have a bunch of bananas at the top of the pole, and so the monkeys saw the bananas, they were in there hungry, and they started climbing the pole. Well, as they got close to the bananas, they started shooting cold water and flashing lights or some way to alarm the monkeys, and the monkeys, of course, would go down, and they quit doing that. After a very short number of time, they got conditioned. The conditioned response was, don't touch the don't try to get the prize at the top, because you're going to get sprayed with cold water. They pulled out some monkeys, put in a new set. What was really interesting, it goes on and on, I'm not going to belabor that point, but what's interesting, as they changed out the monkeys, very soon no one tried, and every time they introduced a new monkey, as a new monkey would try to go up, the other monkeys in the room would try to pull them down. And I wonder if we don't have a little bit of that effect going on in right now, because, you know, we tried on LO comp, didn't have anything, so there's no point. This regulatory machine of this administration is rolling over us. So, Alice, I don't know if that's a good explanation, but I think it is a plausible explanation as to what's going on. I think it's we've got so
Well, and I think just to help our listener, I mean, you're not trying to reference anything about the monkeys. It's just about the trained habits. You know, we know that people aren't. I'm going to defend that, you know, we're not monkeys. But the idea of you get used to something and you feel like, you know, is it worth it? I think you're right in that, Dave, that there are definitely,
well,
as you were describing, different groups out there. You know, some people are feeling, wow, you know, what should I do? Should I just sit back and take my loan applications and see what kind of commission I can get in 2011 and try and ignore the rest of the regulations coming at me?
Well, I think that's one thing, is ignorance is one thing. But I think one of the things that was the reason I want to get into this in this today's program was there seems to be basically – two groups with maybe a couple of subgroups in the second group. There's that's, you know, those that have, I think, maturely accepted it. It's here. LO comp's here. We got new regulations here. We got more coming on the way, as Alice reports in the each and every week. Stay tuned. You'll hear about more that's down the road. The latest number is, what is it, 19 or 1859. So we've got more coming. And so it seems like the ones that are handling it and are having the best success, and it's interesting, those are those same companies that are seeming to have had good growth in production, picking up loan officers and branches, is those companies that have a right attitude about this thing. It's a move on. Let's deal with it. We tried. We did not get a change, but let's get back to work, as the industry is still a viable industry. So that was one response. Then we're seeing on the LinkedIn discussion group another group which is just really struggling in their attitude, struggling with the whole this is wrong and all the things that go with that. Some of the attitudes are, quite frankly, a little on the raw side, and some might say raunchy. But and I want to talk to those groups. And, Alice, I mean, as you travel around and you speak to a lot of people, And you were saying on the call before we got on the radio program that most of the companies you're working with seem to be having a pretty positive attitude, or at least a positive acceptance of it, and are moving on. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're trying to make sure people, too, are thinking that way, that there are when it came to the loan officer comp thing, that, you know, the meltdown before kind of laid the groundwork for that, and as of now, this is where we are at. So what are your marketing opportunities in the world today? You know, still trying to help people stay positive. But I agree, Dave, there's a group that's definitely defiant in a sense of, you know, I don't care what the reg says. I think it's dumb. You know, they're trying to, and I don't know if I've ever tried that. You know, I can clearly say I've never tried that logic with an auditor who I've had to sit across the table with. You know, you know, I think your regulation is dumb, and I chose not to follow it.
Chose not to ignore it. And I think, and then it doesn't work if you start trying to pass on a conspiracy theory onto them as well, trying to float that one. Here's the real
usually
reason.
The individual thinking like that, I'm going to say, you know what, you're the person, you're great. You know, whatever job you have, but I would like that you're not in the office the day the regulator, I have to sit with one of them and talk with
That's
one
exactly
of them.
Right.
You know, so,
well, Andy, you used
you know,
to work with a lot of regulators. Go ahead, Alice. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Yep.
I was going to say, going to Andy. Andy used to work with a lot of regulators, and the attitude, especially at the federal level, but the number of regulators that walked through your door when you were at the bank, there's just a definite, really, way to handle some of the stuff. And we're going to be dealing with these regulators as they start auditing us. Any tips for our listeners that are having to deal with a new set of people in their offices?
Well, I can tell you from what Alice was talking about, that if you're sitting across the desk from a regulator, or in the banking world we call them examiners, and you tell them that they're wrong, you think it's stupid, or you're just not going to comply, that's not going to end well. You're not going to end up with where you want to be. You're going to end up where you don't want to be, because at the end of the day, they've got unlimited resources to do whatever they can to make your life miserable. So it's much better to smile and comply, and even if you think it's dumb, even if you're confident, you're absolutely positive that you're right, by arguing with them, it's just going to make it worse. And so it kind of reminds me, when I was in college, I had this little Volkswagen driving through the highway in Texas, and this great big huge cattle truck comes up next to me and passes me and almost cuts me off, and great big huge cattle, smelly cattle truck driving in Texas. And I almost get knocked off the road in my little car. And so I think, I'm going to show him. So I come, I'm, 18 years old.
In your Volkswagen, you're going to take
so
on an 18-wheeler.
I pour it on my little car, and I come up right underneath that truck, and I'm just going to show him what's for, how dare he cut me off in that great big smelly cattle truck. And I'm, after about 30 seconds, I go, what am I going to do? Am I going to ram him?
Right.
Good point. So you just say, okay, and it's smelly, so you back off, you get great. So, compliance, really, even if it means you have to back off your perspective, really does end up with a better outcome, because you're not going to win. You're not going to be better off. You're just going to smell bad and get your car wrecked. So just do it. Just follow the rules, and life's much better.
Well, and I think what you have to be careful of today is that there's a lot in writing out on the Internet. So you're going to hear, here's the main group, and I'll just use Point Banks as an example. There's the majority of the group listened to the same federal webinar that most of us did, where they clearly said Point Banks aren't allowed. And so if you say as a company policy, you don't agree with that because you've read the regulation yourself and you feel that you have a different interpretation, when there's other documentation from higher-ups that is to the contrary, then get a good lawyer. And if you've got an attorney that you are willing to stand behind and says, I can defend this all day long, then that's fine. I'm not going to pretend to be a lawyer here. But the minute you're not going with the masses, there's no safety in numbers. I need a good legal opinion then behind you if you want to be defiant.
Exactly.
Well, I think, there's no safety numbers. I think we really have to look at this, and it does feel very predatory right now, the regulatory world, and I think that's what we're hearing, some of the visceral attitudes and commentary that's out there. I mean, somebody's getting pretty raw and real. I mean, and I understand it. I don't want it for one second to think we're sounding critical of you in that. We understand the emotional response. But like Andy driving down the freeway, and that guy should have been paying attention, probably was going too fast and was not driving safely, and but the reality, taking on an 18-wheeler with a Volkswagen, it's just not a good idea. And I think number one is the reason I want to get into this, is that for those of you that are struggling with this, I understand it. I think you need to just come to the grips, like Alice says, deal with it, focus on it, and deal with it. We're not saying deal with it, like just sit down and deal with it. We understand the emotional contents, the context that's going on in with many of you. But we're just saying it is here, and now we have to deal with it. One of the things we're having to deal with is the call report. The call report was due today, and as Andy and Alice have been talking to you, our listeners, about it each and every week, we've been telling you about it there. So there seems to be two groups. There seems to be an attitude. The vast majority of the lenders that are having a I don't like it, but I got to do it, so we'll do it. And they resolved themselves to it, and guess what? They got the reports filed. Alice, you travel around a lot. Most of your clients and customers got through it, did they not?
Yeah, we were getting some good feedback that people actually got it out, got it filed early, but to Andy's point, I think a lot of people this first time around just managed to fill in the blanks, and you really need to go back and audit the information, because there's the reality of trying to track an unlocked pipeline, especially as a broker who never had anybody else, any third party, really analyzing what was in your system, you know, to really back you up, then you should put some kind of self-testing in place there to just check that what's physically in the file matched what was on that report, because we believe that's the approach the state regulators are going to take, is actually pulling a file and taking samples from those reports and saying, prove to me that these numbers were right.
But at least they filed something. And I think that's the one thing. We're going to talk about the data. They filed it. And I think, Andy, you said, we were talking about, what are the consequences of not filing? And there is what are the regulations, again, now, that the penalties relate to? We're not going to get into the penalty, discuss the penalties, but what are the regulations related to so they can go out, and our listeners go out and do their homework on it?
Oh, well, the filing penalty for the NMLS, Andy and I have the same mantra, just file it, don't wait to find out. And there wasn't a written penalty for not filing the report. You know, they didn't say it's X number of dollars per, you know, whatever, if you don't file the report on time.
Yeah.
That's just you're in violation. It's like if you didn't get a truth in lending out in 3 days, you can't undo that event and all of a sudden get yourself back in compliance. So I think before the call, maybe what you're thinking of is we were talking about the penalties on the loan officer compensation side. That's where we were talking about. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't change subject yet. We can finish the NMLS subject first.
let's get on this one. So, Andy, one of the things we were talking about on the program, you got the data. What are you going to do with it? I mean, there's some real powerful information. Assuming, first of all, you got to make sure, as we said earlier, you did in the Profit Doctor segment, make sure the data going into your instruments, your indicators, what you filed, is accurate. So assuming that it's accurate, what could they do with the data, Andy?
Oh, it's amazing. One of the key performance indicators that we talk about is measuring your unlocked pipeline pull-through. Because everybody looks at the locked pipeline forward, but people don't generally look at the unlocked pipeline. And when you get an application in, somebody touched it, somebody printed paper, somebody created a regulatory risk for compliance with the GFE and so forth, and also gave it to a processor, and a processor worked on it and, you know, built a file, used a bunch of paper clips, you know, stapled a bunch of stuff, and it took time, entered it into the system, took up hours. And so the most productive mortgage company is a mortgage company where every application becomes a loan. That's what you want. And people, once it's locked on, because, you know, you've got the best efforts tracking or you got your heads tracking, you kind of are following that. But not many people are watching from application to lock or application to funding to see really what's happening. But by doing this report, we can now look at unlocked pipeline fallout by branch, even down by LO. And you may have an LO in a branch that's got an 80% fallout from application for disposition before lock. And that's very expensive. I mean, they're not making any money. They're taking up a ton of time for the process, burning up a bunch of paper, using a bunch of files. And that's a very inefficient. That's the worst use of a mortgage banking's platform, is to tie up stuff that has a very low probability of funding. So we can now look. This is awesome because we can check. So it's like my little Volkswagen got covered with cow manure, and I scrape it up and go sell it. This is really cool because now we can go take that information and make improvements on our business and, you know, find out who's taking apps that are junk and teach them better how to, you know, evaluate customers. And Alice has a bunch of comments, I'm sure, on the rules to follow when you do that. But let's watch the data from application, even if it's not locked.
I think the assumption is you go out there and you file it, and assuming you just didn't willfully, you know, ignore it, that's the biggest mistake you made. If you did it, get it filed, get it in there right away. Compliance, at least an effort to comply with it initially, is very, very important. Then make sure the data is right, and then look at all the data you got there. You can manage your business very, very effective. Alice, you do a lot of training across the country on this. It really wasn't that bad. I mean, is it because people were weary, do you think? But it seems like this got done fairly, by those that were listening to it and were aware about it, we didn't hear a lot of commotion.
Well, I think internally they were certainly trying to, or knew they had a fair amount of scrubbing to do, you know, and so people just accepted it and got their operations in gear to, you know, dedicated one, two, or however many people it took to try and make sure that the data was accurate and just make sure they met the deadline. So I think they'll find it's one of those regulations you kind of go at the end, wow, this is really going to be useful information.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things we talked about briefly touched on, and I want to get into is some of the few minutes that we have left in the program, is last week I talked about one of our clients actually had one of their borrowers on a loan that they had made for this borrower, and I think a couple years earlier, had received in a letter from an attorney stating that the company that had made that loan was in fact involved in a class action lawsuit, and this attorney, this law firm, was inquiring whether or not this borrower would like to join that lawsuit. Now, what's interesting about that letter was that representation that they had a lawsuit pending was completely false. This law firm, imagine that, an unscrupulous law firm, imagine that, was out there representing that they were out there with a lawsuit, and they didn't have a lawsuit. We're going to get into that in just a minute. We're going to take a brief break and be right back to kind of give you some tips on what you can do if you're getting how to head that problem off of the past. We'll be right back after this brief break.
PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Welcome back. This is Dave Lickin with Lickin on Lending, and we're talking about what if you get or one of your borrowers lets you know that they're being solicited to join a lawsuit. And it may not even be a lawsuit that exists, a complete false assertion by this law firm. So anyway, it's out there. We're aware of it. And so we were talking about, we contacted an attorney, and so we want to bring you three things you can do. Number one, you can be very aggressive, go after and sue that law firm. The problem with that is you might open up a door where they could go back and do discovery. So like the old saying, methinks thou dost protest too much. Well, you protesting may be open the door where they might do discovery and you may have an unwanted consequence. It's a strategy you may want to consider, but something you may want to look at, number one. Number two is you could just say, forget it, not worry about it, don't do anything. That just seems counterintuitive to anyone who's managing their business. So how do you respond? One of the responses is you could go out and contact borrowers that you have done loans for. But as Alice is going to share with you, there's some ways you do and do not, you should and should not do that. Alice, help our listeners through that.
Well, I think if you say, you know, my customer is getting a letter from somebody else that I think is inaccurate and I want to reach out to my borrowers, I just want to remind everybody of, you know, that you need to be careful on your responding under the do not call and no, you know, yep. No canned spam solicitation laws. And so sending a letter is fine. You can certainly send anything you want through the mail, but make sure that if you're going to reach out to customers, you've maintained a relationship with them by email because you can't just start cold calling people you haven't talked to in over 18 months. If the loan never even closed, you really only have about a six-month window before you, you know, where now that customer is no longer you have an established relationship with. So, you know, certainly we want people to be able to use it as an opportunity, maybe a marketing opportunity, to help customers understand, hey, there's some false claims out there, but be careful how you do it, I guess, is what's my message.
That would be a good message. In other words, you just can't go right out there and say, when I did your loan, I mean, you don't own that loan. That loan was sold. It's been there. There's definitely some do's and don'ts. Best thing to do is to reach out to you, talk to your customer. Hey, we just want to tell you it's great to have been with you. Glad to have helped you. If you ever need any more financing needs, we'd love to work with you. Some of your personal sales agreements do not allow for that. But go back and check your personal sales agreements.
I think it's more, too. from, you know, making sure on the marketing standpoint, that's where the value of the constant marketing programs that are available out there, where you're, you know, on a regular basis throughout the course of the year, you're keeping in touch with a customer if you didn't close, especially since you have a shorter window there. Once you have a transaction, then you've got that 18-month window, you know, that you have an actual relationship established. So those are the ones that are, you know, I think that helps to keep you in contact from a marketing standpoint and helps keep you in compliance.
Keep you in compliance. One of the things Alice wants to make sure we do. We're going to try to go out and find. We're going to go out and try to find Tony Garitano right now. See if we can't locate that rascal. He dialed in from a different telephone number. Tony, are you out there in the audience? Do we have you there? We are trying to locate Tony. So Tony, if you could put your hand up on the dashboard, we'd love to try to find you. Get your commentary. We're not seeing you from the phone lines that we have. Tony. Well, Tony, we're sorry we're going to have to miss you. We have passed on. I want to come back to Andy on the call report real quickly. And, Andy, you had talked about there was one more point regarding building a chart of accounts. The chart of accounts is so critical in order to be able to analyze the data that's there.
Yes, Dave, exactly. You know, we today's the deadline for filing the RMLA section of the call report. So everybody's got to do that now. And for those that are filing the standard report, which is a lot of people, maybe even more than half, the financial condition report isn't due until the end of the year, and it'll actually be filed on March the 31st along with your HUD audit. But here's the deal. That new call report, the financial condition section of the call report, has a salary reporting requirements that are much more extensive than most people do today. You've got to break out salaries by sales staff, non-sales staff, processors, secondary marketing, closing, and management. I don't know of any of our existing clients that actually do that much detail. Most people only do two or three categories. So we need to go into accounting, get the chart of accounts, take the salary section and get a copy of the financial condition section of the call report, make certain the chart of accounts expense section for salaries has every single line identified. Then go back to January 15 for the first payroll and take that information and break it out and post a journal entry to reclass everything into those additional fields, and then do that for every payroll since the beginning of the year, and then post every new payroll in that new structure for the rest of the year. That way, when you get to the end of the year and it's time to do the report, it'll already be there in as much detail as you need it to do the report. If you don't do it that way, then that means you're going to pay your auditor to go back to the beginning of the year and do this.
Ooh, that gets expensive.
All the way through. It's going to be very expensive. It's not that big a deal to change it right now. Take care of it now, and you'll save thousands of dollars at the end of the year.
Well, also that's a good opportunity to say, if you have not already signed up for it, we're wrapping up this series. Andy referenced the Campus MBA webinar. We are doing the fifth session this week on accounting. Right. We're getting to hedging accounting. But you can go download or purchase this webinar and listen to it on a recorded basis from Campus MBA. You can go to lickinonlending.com. And LYKKEN Lending on LickinOnLending.com, and get a link directly to our website and off into Campus MBA, so you can register for that. We received a lot of positive feedback. We're going to be doing it again, and we'll let you all, our listeners, know when we're going to be doing this again, this webinar series on accounting, because chart of accounts, that's the foundation of the data. You have all this reporting, and it's so critical. It's Alice, let's jump back to you. Is there anything you have that you want as we go to the window here, go to the door as the exit door?
Oh, I just wanted to let everybody know that we did hear FHA, HUD held a seminar earlier this week. There is no intention of extending the expiration of the principal agent relation exception that runs only until July 1st. So as we talked about, those of you who do not have their direct endorsement underwriting approval yet, you're a full mortgagee, but you're still working through test cases, and you have a principal agent relationship that is helping you through this process, those will absolutely be expiring on January 1st. So just a heads up, that's not going to get extended to our knowledge at this point.
Not getting extended. And thank you so much, Alice, and thank you so much for both of you being on the program each and every week. We're here each and every week
bringing you content about what is going on in the industry. Be sure to tell your friends about it. Tell your state association about it, your local city, wherever you're getting information. Tell them about the radio program. We appreciate you so much being a part of us each and every week. Next week, we're going to be going further into what do you do when you are getting sued, or how can you head one of these problems off? We've got some proactive ideas. We're hopefully going to have a guest on here who's going to give you some suggestions, kind of the mystery shopper approach. Folks, have a great week. Again, we'll look forward to having you back next week and listening with us. Have a great week. Stay compliant. Get your reports filed. Talk to you soon. Bye.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.